Chapter 5. High on his rocky promontory, the electric monk continued to sit on a horse which was going quietly and uncomplainingly, spare. From under its rough, woven cowl, the monk gazed unblinkingly down into the valley, with which it was having a problem. But the problem was a new and hideous one to the monk, for it was this: doubt. He never suffered it for long, but when he did, it gnawed the very root of his being. The day was hot. The sun stood in an empty, hazy sky and beat down upon the grey rocks and the scrubby, parched grass. Nothing moved, not even the monk. But strange things were beginning to fizz in its brain, as they did from time to time when a piece of data became misaddressed as it passed through its input buffer. But then the monk began to believe, fitfully and nervously at first, but then with a great searing white flame of belief which overturned all previous beliefs, including the stupid one about the valley being pink, that somewhere down in the valley, about a mile from where he was sitting, there would shortly open up a mysterious doorway into a strange and distant world, a doorway through which he might enter. An astounding idea! Astoundingly enough, however, on this one occasion, he was perfectly right. The horse sensed that something was up. It pricked up its ears and gently shook its head. It had gone into a sort of trance, looking at the same clump of rocks for so long, and was on the verge of imagining them to be pink itself. It shook its head a little harder. A slight twitch on the reins and a prod from the monk's heels, and they were off, picking their way carefully down the rocky incline. The way was difficult. Much of it was loose shale, loose brown and grey shale, with the occasional brown and green plant clinging to a precarious existence on it. The monk noticed this without embarrassment. It was an older, wiser monk now, and had put childish things behind it. Pink valleys, hermaphrodite tables, these are all natural stages through which one had to pass on the path to true enlightenment. The sun beat hard on them. The monk wiped the sweat and dust off its face and paused, leaning forward on the horse's neck. It peered down through the shimmering heat haze at a large outcrop of rock which stood out onto the floor of the valley. There, behind that outcrop, was where the monk thought, or rather passionately believed to the core of its being, the door would appear. He tried to focus more closely, but the details of the view swam confusingly in the hot rising air. As it sat back in its saddle and was about to prod the horse onward, it suddenly noticed a rather odd thing. On a flattish wall of rock nearby, in fact so nearby that the monk was surprised not to have noticed it before, was a large painting. The painting was crudely drawn, though not without a certain stylish sweep of line, and seemed very old, possibly very, very old indeed. The paint was faded, chipped, and patchy, and it was difficult to discern with any clarity what the picture was. The monk approached the picture more closely. It looked like a primitive hunting scene. The group of purple, multi-limbed creatures were clearly early hunters. They carried rough spears and were in hot pursuit of a large, horned and armoured creature, which appeared to have been wounded in the hunt already. The colours were now so dim as to be almost non-existent. In fact, all that could be clearly seen was the white of the hunter's teeth, which seemed to shine with a whiteness whose lustre was undimmed by the passage of what must have been many thousands of years. In fact, they even put the monk's own teeth to shame, and he'd cleaned them only that morning. The monk had seen paintings like this before, but only in pictures or on the TV, never in real life. They were usually to be found in caves, where they were protected from the elements, otherwise they would not have survived. The monk looked more carefully at the immediate environs of the rock wall, and noticed that, though not exactly in a cave, it was nevertheless protected by a large overhang and was well sheltered from the wind and rain. Odd, though, that it should have managed to last so long. Odder still that it should appear not to have been discovered. Such cave paintings as there were all famous and familiar images, but this was not one that he had ever seen before. Perhaps this was a dramatic and historic find he had made. Perhaps if he were to return to the city and announce this discovery, he would be welcomed back, given a new motherboard after all, and allowed to believe... believe what? He paused, blinked, and shook his head to clear a momentary system error. He pulled himself up short. He believed in a door. He must find that door. The door was the way to... The door was the way. Good. Capital letters are always the best way of dealing with things you didn't have a good answer to. Brusquely, he tugged the horse's head round and urged it onward and downward. Within a few minutes more of tricky manoeuvring, they had reached the valley floor, and he was momentarily disconcerted to discover that the fine top layer of dust that had settled on the brown, parched earth was indeed a very pale brownish pink, particularly on the banks of the sluggish trickle of mud, which was all that remained in the hot season of the river that flowed through the valley when the rains came. He dismounted and bent down to feel the pink dust and run it through his fingers. It was very fine and soft and felt pleasant as he rubbed it on his skin. It was about the same colour, perhaps a little paler. The horse was looking at him. He realised, a little belatedly perhaps, that the horse must be extremely thirsty. He was extremely thirsty himself, but had tried to keep his mind off it. He unbuckled the water flask from the saddle. It was pathetically light. He unscrewed the top and took one single swig. Then he poured a little into his cupped hand and offered it to the horse, who slurped at it greedily and briefly. The horse looked at him again. The monk shook his head sadly, resealed the bottle and replaced it. He knew, in that small part of his mind where he kept factual and logical information, that it would not last much longer, and that without it, neither would they. It was only his belief that kept him going, currently his belief in the door. He brushed the pink dust from his rough habit, and then stood looking at the rocky outcrop, a mere 100 yards distant. He looked at it not without a slight, tiny trepidation, although the major part of his mind was firm in its eternal and unshakable belief that there would be a door behind the outcrop, and that the door would be the way, yet the tiny part of his brain that understood about the water bottle could not help but recall past disappointments, and sounded a very tiny but jarring note of caution. If he elected not to go and see the door for himself, then he would continue to believe in it forever. It would be the lodestone of his life. What little was left of it, said the part of his brain that knew about the water bottle. If, on the other hand, he went to pay his respects to the door, and it wasn't there, what then? The horse whinnied impatiently. The answer, of course, was very simple. He had a whole board of circuits for dealing with exactly this problem. In fact, this was the very heart of his function. He would continue to believe in it, whatever the facts turned out to be. What else was the meaning of belief? The door would still be there, even if the door was not. He pulled himself together. The door would be there, and he must now go to it, because the door was the way. Instead of remounting his horse, he led it. The way was but a short way, and he should enter the presence of the door in humility. He walked, brave and erect, with solemn slowness. He approached the rocky outcrop. He reached it. He turned the corner. He looked. The door was there. The horse, it must be said, was quite surprised. The monk fell to his knees in awe and bewilderment. So braced was he for dealing with the disappointment that was habitually his lot, that though he would never know to admit it, he was completely unprepared for this. He stared at the door in sheer blank system error. It was a door such as he had never seen before. All the doors he knew were great steel-reinforced things because of all the video recorders and dishwashers that were kept behind them, plus, of course, all the expensive electric monks that were needed to believe in it all. This one was simple, wooden and small, about his own size. A monk-sized door, painted white, with a single slightly dented brass knob, slightly less than halfway up one side. It was set simply in the rock face with no explanation as to its origin or purpose. Hardly knowing how he dared, the poor startled monk staggered to his feet and, leading his horse, walked nervously forward towards it. He reached out and touched it. He was so startled when no alarms went off that he jumped back. He touched it again, more firmly this time. He let his hand drop slowly to the handle. Again, no alarms. He waited to be sure, and then he turned it very, very gently. He felt a mechanism release. He held his breath. Nothing. He drew the door towards him, and it came easily. He looked inside, but the interior was so dim in contrast with the desert sun outside that he could see nothing. At last, almost dead with wonder, he entered, pulling the horse in after him. A few minutes later, a figure that had been sitting out of sight around the next outcrop of rock finished rubbing dust on his face, stood up, stretched his limbs, and made his way back towards the door, patting his clothes as he did so.